Welcome to Season 4 of I'll Go If You Go, a podcast from Save the Redwoods League where we talk to people who love Redwoods and the communities they bring together. This season, we're talking to people who work in the Redwoods, from ecologists to interpreters to designers and more, about what they do, why they love it, and how they got started. Adventure and the Redwoods are out there. I'll go if you go! Hi! Welcome to Season 4 of I'll Go If You Go. I'm Emily, your host. If you're listening to this podcast, I assume you like redwoods, nature, and the outdoors. Maybe you're at the beginning of your career, thinking of a change, or maybe you're still in school and open to ideas. Well, this season, we're exploring different ways you can make being outdoors your vocation. If you want to work outdoors, including in the redwoods, then keep listening. Since this season is all about the work our guests do outdoors, we're going back out into the field to record these conversations outside where the action's at. But we're kicking off this season by recording from the offices of Save the Redwoods League, which is where I got my start working in environmental conservation. I'm joined here today by Leslie Parra, Outreach Program Manager at Save the Redwoods League and my podcast co-conspirator. You hear my voice on the podcast, but Leslie works behind the scenes to help find our exciting guests, shape our main themes, and listen to my rough cuts so all of you don't have to. Leslie's support and friendship is key to making I'll Go If You Go the fun and enriching podcast it is.
Hi, Emily. Hi, listeners. Thank you so much for joining us this season. This season is particularly special to me. As a conservationist, I chose this path of outreach and education to support diversity in this field. And this season, with extra episodes, you'll witness that we're here, working in different roles, but collectively to conserve nature and enjoy it. Oh, it's so great to be here.
I'm so excited for the season. This podcast is usually me interviewing other people about who they are and what they do. So we thought it would be fun to turn the tables and have Leslie interview me for this first episode.
Yes, yes, yes. We're going to find out who is Emily Harwood. Please tell us in 10 words. How would you describe yourself in 10 words?
That's a lot of words. Passionate, curious, adventurous, adaptable, animal.
Animal, I think of the Muppets, which he has a lot of zest for life.
Not huh? No.
All those are key ingredients to enjoy life. Where do you feel that this love of life came from?
First of all, thank you. That was just 5 words. Thanks for letting me off the hook. Oh. This love for life. I grew up in Miami, Florida, which is in the neotropics. There is, you know, lizards running around everywhere. My grandparents lived right on Biscayne Bay. They're still there. And it's just the nature, it was just so easy to access because you walk outside and, you know, where I was living, it's just everywhere, the trees and the flowers. And I think that's where my love for life itself came from, is just being surrounded by it. And also my grandparents and my dad going to my local parks nature center. Shout out to Lola, the naturalist there, who would bring out the snakes and, you know, the mice and everything for all the kids to interact with. So I think my love for life came from not only being surrounded by nature, but also having adults in my life to show me how to interact with it in a safe way. And also, I was probably just born the love for animals. So yeah, that's where it started.
That's right. You know, it sounds like it's definitely environment, family, and I love that shout out that you gave to that educational center. I feel like I can relate to that too. It's so important, like the hands-on educational when it comes to nature and science.
Yeah, I loved the nature center, Enchanted Forest.
Ooh, Enchanted Forest. So being our host is one of your many jobs that involves connecting people to nature. Tell us more about your other venues that you work and what you do to connect people to nature and science or the outdoors.
So I guess these are my other words, my other 5 words to describe myself. I am a journalist, writer, filmmaker. That's a new emerging side of my career. The through line for all of these things is storytelling. I think stories are so important. They're really important vehicles for understanding the world around us and what is going on. And
absolutely.
Yeah, even through, like, stories are just throughout all of humanity. It's how we connect, how we share information, how we make meaning. So I think it's a really powerful way to connect people to the things that are important. And for me, that's nature and each other and love.
love for nature and each other. Can you tell me an example of like one of the projects that you love a lot that you've been working on recently that really signifies what you just said, that connection, that those three things you listed?
Yes. So I have a film in pre-production right now I'm working on, and it's about the seagrass ecosystems of Biscayne Bay, which is my local park where I grew up. So it's a highly underappreciated ecosystem within Biscayne Bay that provides so much seagrass. Not only is it a really cool plant, it's the only type of plant that flowers and lives its life completely underwater. But it also supports baby fish, and it's also food for manatees and sea turtles, and helps to filter the water and keep the water quality clean. So anyways, with this film, I want to share the magic of not just this specific little ecosystem, but also just let people know that it's there.
Why do you feel that it's underappreciated?
Yeah, because it's not as charismatic as like the coral reefs in the bay. You know, it's a plant.
A very important plant in that ecosystem.
It is very important. But I think it's a lot easier to connect with animals or things that are big and bright and colorful. So I think seagrass itself isn't as exciting to look at first glance. And I think it requires a little bit of understanding and a little bit of information about why it's cool for people to be able to appreciate it. So that's what I'm hoping to do, is just to share some information about what this thing is, and hopefully people can learn about it.
Absolutely. And I think film is a great way to do that. I'm excited to see it when it's ready to show. So you were mentioning something about the flower, just folks don't know that much about it. And I'm sure like the redwoods don't have that problem. Redwoods are so big and incredible to look at. And so
redwoods have a lot of charisma, that's for sure.
They do have a lot of charisma. How and by themselves, right? So how do you go about, as a journalist, as a science journalist, to connect people to these forests, or through like your host job here at I'll Go If You Go? How do you make that even further connection if people, you know, when people haven't seen it or if they have visited it?
That's a really interesting question, especially compared to this other plant. So redwoods, sometimes I feel like redwoods are so charismatic and so majestic and grand that they, like, it's the opposite problem where they can feel hard to connect with. You know, you go to a redwood forest, and I think a lot of people experience a feeling of awe and, oh my gosh, I'm so small. These trees are so big. And I think with storytelling about the redwoods and with I'll Go If You Go, one of the things I would like to impart on listeners is that we can all have our own connections with the redwoods. You can go there by yourself or with friends, and like every time you go out to the redwoods, you can have a different experience. And all these experiences add up to your own story with the redwoods. One of the things I like to do is stomp around and hear the sound of my boots hitting the wet duff on the ground. Like, I just love that sound.
That's awesome.
So I think being in a redwood forest surrounded by these huge majestic trees, I think paying attention to the little details can help you more feel more connected to the entire forest and feel your place within it.
Okay, let's switch a little gears a little bit here. What kind of advice would you have for folks that want to write about nature or really love science and they want to make it connected to people? I think one of the hardest things about science writing, for example, like journals, or I mean, like, how do we make those fun and connected to people?
The first advice I would give is read a lot. If you want to write, it really helps to know what you like. Pay attention to what you connect with when you're reading stories about nature. And there's also different media of storytelling, you know, like podcasts, for example. You could listen to podcasts and interviews, or you could watch films of like nature documentary films.
So forget reading.
Well, I think all of the above is really important.
Right, absolutely.
And read and listen to things in different styles. You could read science nature books, or you could read poetry about nature. Shout out to Mary Oliver. She's one of my favorite poets. She's actually how I got into my love for poetry. Someone gave me a book of Mary Oliver. So she writes a lot about nature.
Oh, cool. So see, you connected through your love of nature into poetry?
Yeah, I think everyone is drawn to beauty. Mm-hmm. People find beauty in different places or different things that resonate. For me, I really love words.
They're so important to connect with each other.
I mean, a word is like a unit of meaning, and you string different words together, and it's like emergent properties in a forest.
I get it. It's also kind of what we were chatting about, like, a word by itself has one meaning, but when you have a whole string sentence, you have like a collective vision.
Exactly.
Or story to tell. Yeah. It's storytelling.
I love that you said collective. Yeah. Because that's what's happening. And that's one of the things we're trying to do with this podcast is, like, yes, every episode we talk to individual guests, but when you put everyone together, you start to see that we are a community out here. And there's like so many people out here who care about nature and who want to protect the outdoors.
Hey listeners, I hope you're enjoying this brief musical interlude. Do you have comments, questions, stories about working in the Redwoods? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at outreach@savetheredwoods.org. Okay, back to the episode.
I didn't have a straight path to working in environmental science storytelling. I went to college for my undergrad. I studied chemistry, and then I worked for a minute in biotech, making fake sweat for a biotech company.
We have to hear about that in a different episode.
And then I worked in sustainability, marketing communications, which was like closer to what I thought I wanted to do. And then I started working at Save the Redwoods League. And that was a decision that, you know, like it was a long and brutal job hunt. I was trying to figure out what my next step was going to be. And there was one opportunity to work in like data analytics for a carbon capture company. And so like it was aligned with things that I cared about, helping the environment. But the other opportunity was to work at Save the Redwoods League on the conservation programs team. And I ended up choosing to go that route because the question I asked myself was, if I meet someone at a party, like, what would I feel excited to talk about? What would I feel proud to say that I'm doing? And I realized that for me, that was protecting nature and helping to connect people with it.
I love how you use that. If you were at a party, what would you say? I mean, that's a true testament to you connecting with people. Like, you're a social person, because the environment that you just chose to like describe how you would describe your career would be in a party.
Yeah, you know, I really like talking about what I do because I love it. I feel so grateful and fortunate to be able to do for my job what I really care about. Yeah, just sharing what I love with the world. And then so I was working at, say, the Redwoods League for a couple of years. I still felt like it wasn't quite it for me. Like the job I was doing there was facilitating other people doing conservation. And, you know, I was learning so much about what other people were doing in the field. And I realized that for my next step, what I wanted to do was science journalism.
Why science journalism?
I got into science because I'm a very curious person and I thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the characteristics that you described yourself as, curious.
That's true. Yeah. So yeah, one of the reasons is just because I'm curious. I love learning. As a journalist, you know, it's part of my job to ask questions and, you know, to read science papers and see what's coming out and try to see like what would be important or interesting or fun for people to know about. And then I go and I tell the story about it. So that's one of the reasons why science journalism. But another reason is because science is a really important way of knowing. It's not the only way of knowing there is. We also have art. There's traditionally ecological knowledge. But I think like it's so important to understanding how things work in this world and everything from medicine to conservation and what's happening with the climate. It's just so important for our survival.
Yeah, I mean, it's mysterious. Mm-hmm. It draws you in. That's why I love science too. That's why my undergrad and my master's are in science, is because it's, for me, it's always been a way to continue asking questions about life in this world around us. What I wanted to focus on now is, where's your passion for science and connecting it to people? Where is it taking you? Where do you see yourself, or what kind of project would you love to do?
A great question. Where do I see myself? Right here, right now. I've really been trying to live in the present moment, but a little bit of future planning is important, and not just planning, but dreaming, vision boarding. I still have yet to do my 2024 vision board, but it's on my list of things to do. I see myself making my vision board.
In May.
Okay, back to the question. Something that I've been thinking about a lot recently is the importance of public parks. And I say park and not just land because I think when you call something a park, it makes people want to protect it and cherish it. And, you know, it becomes something that they can feel a part of. Mm-hmm. And I think we're constantly inundated with all this news about climate change and like global heat waves and things that are happening all around the world. It feels so big. And it is. But there are so many things that we can do at the local level and that have actual real change to our daily lives. Mm-hmm. Something like access to a public park, not only does it have so many health benefits, you know, it lowers stress levels, it can even lower cholesterol, there's studies about that, mm-hmm. but also it brings people together. And I think that being able to connect with a green space, it just makes us feel more alive in our
absolutely
in our animal bodies.
It's a place people gather. It's a place where people explore. You can come as like by yourself, or you can come with friends and family.
Yeah.
It can hold a lot of memories for a lot of different people.
And it's also so important to protect what green spaces, what parks we have, because a park is a biodiversity hotspot, provides refuge for not just people, but all the plants and animals. And the more parks we have and the more access that people can have to parks, I think that would also mean the more access other creatures have to it too.
Absolutely. I love it. I think let's conserve more land. Let's make more public parks. And everybody benefits this way, and we'll have a healthier society from it. Well, let's talk about parks a little bit more then, since that's a great way to transition. What would a perfect park look like for you? Or what would be like your favorite park? What would it look like? And let's say it's a redwood park.
All right, it's a redwood, a perfect redwood park. Well, we're definitely going to have some prescribed burns on the ground. Fire will be a very important part of stewarding this park, and I would love to have demonstrations where people can come and see the prescribed fires in practice. Mm-hmm. I've written some stories about prescribed burns, and like the details that go into how people put fire on the ground is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. For example, in fire ecology, one of the important ideas is studying how fire behaves under different conditions. Mm-hmm. And when prescribed burn practitioners are putting fire in the ground, they have to look at, you know, like the, what are the weather conditions? What is the vegetation like? What's going to burn? And then in order to create certain levels of fire or certain patterns of burn, like you use a drip torch to drop fire in different patterns. So like you can put fire on the ground in dots, or you can do it like in triangles or parallel lines. But there are so many.
There's almost like an art to it.
Exactly. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. What about storytelling? What would a great, you know, park, how does storytelling come across in a park? And
I'm going to have a vibrant, bustling nature center staffed with naturalists who are very well paid with great benefits. And there will be dioramas. There will be written explanations of the different kinds of nature people can see in the park. Films, maybe even experimental films.
I would love
a room in my nature center that has art. Oh, I'm going to have an artist residency.
That's great.
And so I'm going to have housing where artists can come and stay, and they can make nature-informed and inspired art.
I'd love to see different languages, the opportunity to
Able
to experience a park and its stories from that park in different languages.
Definitely, yes. Multilingual interpreters, multilingual signage.
Wow, I'm just thinking of what a future park may look like. I mean, can you imagine if they would have all these great naturalists, but they're, when there's just their image?
Holograms.
Naturalists, holograms. Oh, that would be cool. That'd be cool. I always think of, like, I love to have good, like, vista views in parks. Yeah. You know, where you can lay back or sit, but, like, have the comfort of being able to just enjoy the view.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's definitely going to be really exciting trails in my park, but I love that suggestion. I think we also need places where people can just lay in the grass. Yeah, actually, I'm going to have a sky-gazing meadow.
Oh, I love that.
Let's see what else.
All right, we're moving into the lightning round with Emily Horowitz. All right, Emily, we're going to give you some questions here. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, what would that be?
Everything matters, but nothing is serious. No matter how we live our life, we all end up in the same place, so might as well have a good time.
That's right. Have a good time at that Redwood Park. You've had a long relationship with Redwoods, starting here at Save the Redwoods League. If you could work in another capacity in the Redwoods, what would you do?
I would love to be a naturalist leading horseback trail rides.
Okay, if you were a Redwood, where would you be and why?
Well, right now is a really exciting time to be in Redwood National and State Parks, overlooking the Klamath River because of the undamming of the river. So I would love to witness that happen and be a part of the forest as it recovers.
Oh, yes. Be in there with the rest. You're going to spend a day in the Redwoods. What are three things you must absolutely have with you?
All right. I'm taking my travel tea set, and I'm bringing with it either a nice green or oolong tea. And the leaves are going to be in my tea set, so that counts as just one item. I'm bringing a sketchbook that I can either write or draw in, and I'm going to have a little black fountain pen that's clipped onto it, so that's also one item.
Okay, okay.
And my last item is going to be a Tupperware full of strawberries or whatever other fruit is in season.
Okay, the fruit and the Tupperware, one item.
Yeah, like three items.
Oh, I love that. That sounds great. Tea, fruit, and a notebook that you can draw, sketch, write ideas. Sounds lovely. Okay, this one, I don't expect you to answer it right away, like a lightning fast. But what do you hope for our listeners to get from this season?
Ideas, inspiration, zest for life.
Zest for the Redwoods?
Yeah, zest for the Redwoods. Redwoods, including the Coast Redwoods and Giant Sequoia. I hope listeners feel inspired to get outside, to connect with nature, and to follow their passions. Yeah, I'm like, all the guests that we have lined up for this season are doing really cool things. And no one, like, even the guests that we talk to who have been longstanding in their careers, like, this isn't the final destination for anyone. And we're all going to the same place. But before we get there, we're going to other places. And so we're all, whatever stage of our journeys we're at, that's where we are. And so, yeah, I hope listeners can just come along for the ride because it's going to be fun. And Leslie, what about you?
What do I hope that our listeners get from this season is...
This is a special edition of Lightning Round where, where the guests can also ask the interviewer.
Okay. Well, I love this question, actually. For me, personally, I think a lot of us, scientists even, when if you're not working in the outdoors, if you're not working in the Redwoods, you don't realize that there's so many things you could do. There's so many career opportunities. And like you said, if you could be starting your career, you could still be in school, you could maybe have a change of heart and think, oh, I really want to join this effort of like making the outdoors accessible, conserving the land that we have. But what kind of jobs are out there? This is what I'm excited about this season, is that we'll get to be able to share that with our listeners. And we'd love to have you get on board. Let's see how many folks we can recruit in, you know, Redwood conservation, outdoor recreation.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Big party over here. I'll go if you go. And don't forget.
Thanks for joining us on I'll Go If You Go, a Save the Redwoods League podcast. This season is produced by Leslie Parra and hosted, edited, and sound engineered by Emily Horowitz. Thank you to Adam Kaplan for tech support and Caleb Castle, Marcos Castaneda, and Mary McFeely for graphic design and media support. Theme song and music are by Nu Nguyen and Annie Fung. You can find seasons 1, 2, and 3 wherever you listen to podcasts or on savetheredwoods.org, where you can also find transcripts of each episode. If you like our show, please rate and review. It helps more people find us and join in the conversation. For behind the scenes and bonus content, follow us on Instagram at IllGoIfYouGoPod. If you have comments or questions, you can email us at outreach@savetheredwoods.org. We'd love to hear from you and maybe even share your comments on the podcast. And that's all, folks. Catch you next time.